We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We're talking a best ball roster construction with an extraordinarily high win rate on Roto-Viz Radio.
What's up, Roto-Viz?
Welcome into the Roto-Viz Fantasy Football Show. I'm Dave Cabin alongside Curtis Patrick. We're two of the owners at Roto-Viz. We have a very interesting piece of information that Curtis is going to share with everybody tonight. Curtis, how are you doing?
Doing great, man. And just want to let the listeners know, Dave is being a true champ, a little bit under the weather tonight. Actually, a lot bit under the weather, but we wanted to get this episode out. Our schedule may be a little atypical this week as we kind of work around that situation. So I'm gonna jump into the driver's seat here a little bit, and Dave will be the color man. We'll switch spots just so he doesn't have to talk quite as much. And that's going to take us right into our FFPC stat attack. So our FFPC stat attack is brought to you by the Roto-Viz.com FFPC Best Ball Roster Construction Explorer. And over the course of the last couple of weeks, Dave and I have been completing our latest FFPC Best Ball Tournament build. And our latest draft just finished up. We're going to run down that roster tonight. But as we plugged the outcome into the Best Ball Roster Construction Explorer, we found that where we targeted certain positions put us into a 20% win rate category. But when you actually ended with the positional counts for each position, so a traditional best ball slim, a 2-6-8-2 build with certain positions in the rounds that we took them, it's a 42.9% win rate with only 7 examples of teams built this way. So what you have is kind of a weird build that has produced outlier results. We're going to run down our roster, how we kind of got into this build. Neither one of us is going to claim to have known about this outcome until until the draft was completed. But strategically, we landed here, and it's not a surprise to see these types of results, you know, given the type of construction that we have. So just a reminder, all of these tools and research can be yours with the Roto-Viz.com subscription. You can look at roster construction and win rate and ADP and win the flex and all of the projections, everything that we've got up on the site, not just for FFPC, but also for underdog. I know it's definitely best ball season. This stuff can apply to other large tournament situations like the Scott Fish Bowl, which I'm sure many of you are playing in. Finding those edges around the way that you construct a roster and not just a hashtag select the right guys mentality is just so valuable. So we urge you to get in and check out the tools. We're going to talk about them all summer, and we're going to talk about them in this episode, but we would like for you to check them out yourself with a Roto-Viz.com subscription. So Dave, let's talk now about this roster, because we're starting to find ourselves on some players really in both formats that we've been drafting. The back half of the draft is where we're differentiating our teams from one another. And so I think that's That feels comfortable to me, given that we'll probably only have, you know, 10 to 20 teams that we co-manage this year.
Yep.
I'm going to run down some of these picks in the first half of the draft, and then we'll talk a little bit about how we handled the back half, really starting with the quarterback position and some of our dart throws. So just to remind the listeners, we drew the 1-9 in this draft. We started off with Devontae Adams, wide receiver 4 off the board. Cup, Jefferson, and Chase predictably went in front of us. The 4 backs that went before us were Taylor, McCaffrey, Henry, and Eckler. So a very much by the book first round, and Adams was the pick for us here. Aaron Jones, our RB1, we selected in round 2. RB9 off the board. We did select him in front of Leonard Fournette, Saquon Barkley, Javonte Williams, and Alvin Kamara. And you do see him fall behind some of those players at times. We've talked a little bit about why we're on Jones in prior episodes, so you can go back and check that out. Where we really put our flag down is with George Kittle in round 3, and thinking that we actually have an opportunity to potentially have, you know, 3 positional top 3 players with those top 3 picks. Very exciting. Marquise Brown, you know, not going to find a bigger Hollywood fan than me. We took him as aggressively as wide receiver 13 in round 4, followed by one of Dave's favorites, Juju Smith-Schuster, in round 5. So this is kind of like a fandom team. Yep. Through 5 rounds, we end up with a 3 wide receivers, 1 back, and 1 tight end. Then we come back in 6 and 7 with 2 more positional players before we get into the quarterback position. So Elijah Mitchell, not a player we're overly exposed to, Dave. It's kind of a unique situation to stack him with Kittle being double exposed to the 49ers offense through 6 rounds. But I mean, certainly all of the buzz has been that he's got this job on lock, despite the team investing in TDP relatively early in the NFL draft this year. And, you know, Mitchell repeating what he did last year as our RB2 this late in the draft would certainly help us. And we come back with Devontae Smith, wide receiver 35 on the draft board. Certainly a player that we think has more upside than that in round 7. So Dave, I'll pause there for comments on the first 7 rounds. We had we had 2 running backs, 4 wide receivers, and a tight end through the 7 rounds.
It's all right. I didn't know where you were going, but I've recovered. Yeah. I think that this is a very different, clearly, given, you know, what you shared from the roster construction explorer, but this is a different type of team than one that I had put together at all this year, I believe. So I enjoyed doing so. And I also think that the way that these players kind of intertwine together gives us, you know, a pretty nice shot here of having a team that could really surprise ourselves and perform very well in a league. I think that all of these players are positioned in offenses that could really explode this year. Obviously, there's some question marks in San Francisco, but I feel good about the offenses that these players are being brought onto this roster from. The Mitchell pick was one that, in my mind, it took me a little bit of time to make sure that it was the area that I wanted to go. But I think the reality is, Curtis, any of the running backs that you're taking at this point, there's a lot of questions. And I think that you could make the case that given what we saw from Mitchell last year, he actually is the most well-positioned of any running back you were going to be able to get there to have an absolutely, you know, gigantic year. Yes, there's questions you can't carry forward last year, but if you're comparing Mitchell to somebody like Sanders or CEH or Kareem Hunt, even, who we do like, there's a better story there you could tell yourself about Mitchell. So you add him in with Jones, you have 4 stud wide receivers in my opinion, and then you have that real anchor tight end in Kittle, who we've already enumerated a number of times this offseason why we really like. I thought this was a really different and unique but solid base.
I have nothing to add there. Like the way you broke that down. So we waited until round 8 for our QB1. We got on to Dak Prescott here. The quarterbacks that went in front, not really too surprising. You will at times see Tom Brady go before Dak Prescott. We elected for Prescott when Brady was also on the board. Sometimes you'll even see a Trey Lance or Matthew Stafford go in front of Prescott. We also left those guys on the board. So we take him in round eight. We figure out our stack a little bit later in the draft. And then in round nine, you know, we're sitting here with just two running backs. It's kind of a hero RB build with Aaron Jones in the second round being, you know, really the team leader there at that position for us. So we took a big swing on Rashad Penny at RB 38 in round nine. And he was actually that would be the last running back to be drafted for almost two rounds after that. So it definitely felt like we hit that tier there. And the next back to come off the board in round 11 was Rashad White and Alexander Mattison. So it definitely feels like we caught a little bit of luck there for Penny to be sitting there for us in round nine. Round 10, we come back with Aaron Rodgers, and this is where I really want to start getting into the roster construction explorer outputs that we found. So in selecting two quarterbacks before the end of round 10, two guys with a long history of finishing as high-end QB1s, guys that, you know, in Prescott's case, the team certainly leaning on his arm, you know, Dallas, one of the most exciting offenses. And then we've talked about Rodgers in years past. It hasn't really seemed to matter the rotation of skill players that's come in and out of Green Bay. He just, you know, continues to put up those crazy 30-plus passing touchdown seasons with very few interceptions. And so, you know, if he's able to keep that up, sans Davante Adams, we could end up with a pair of top six quarterbacks, not need the third quarterback. So that's going to inform our strategy from here on out. We already took the elite tight end as well. So it really positions us to continue to take swings on running backs and wide receivers through the rest of the end of the draft and give ourselves plenty of opportunity there. And that's how we arrived at some of these outputs. So you can go to the roster construction explorer and edit for the number of players that you end up with at a position. So we go in and we plug in QB equals two. We're only going to end up with two quarterbacks in this draft, and we took both quarterbacks before round 11. And you can, you know, toggle through that at all of the different positions. What you'll find is, and we'll talk about the players, but what you'll find is in a best ball slim, which is the most similar format in our roster construction explorer to the best ball tournament setting, with a 2-6-8-2 being the quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end, 2-6-8-2 configuration, and your quarterback before round 11, hero RB setup, so your RB1 in round 2, five wide receivers deep before round 12, and both tight ends before round 13, 42.9% win rate, Dave. 42.9% win rate. So the way we achieve that is we come back after Rodgers, we take Tyler Boyd in round 11, Noah Fant in round 12, and then it's off to the races. So maybe share some thoughts on the stack of Prescott and Rodgers, how that set us up to stack in the back half of the draft with the cheaper players in those offenses. And then also maybe a thought on Fant being kind of a player we were willing to stop at two tight ends for.
Sure. So the first thing here, I think of why we liked getting Prescott and Rodgers so much was that if you looked at the other teams in this draft, there's really only one team that has a very compelling case for having a much better quarterback group than we have. And we were still able to get quarterbacks that it was very easy to get wide receivers to stack with them. That was one of the things that was so appealing about this maneuver is that you really don't have to do much to prioritize getting Sammy Watkins on your team, right? And there's other receivers there we could have missed on that we still could have paired with Rodgers. Now, Tolbert, in round 13, that is starting to get pretty high, you know, for compared to what I might have expected, you know, a couple of months ago, but that's still not too high of a price tag to be able to pair with our quarterback. So we like that piece of it. I am looking at other teams, for example, with similar groups of passers. There's a team that has Wilson and Derek Carr, but we're not able to pair any players with either of those passers, for example. So that's kind of why we liked the play there with those quarterbacks. Yes. Woof. Short-term memory tonight. Not that great. Noah Fant, I believe your question was, why did we feel good stopping there? Well, obviously, we have Kittle, who we feel so strongly about, that should be contributing every week. So if Kittle isn't the player that we expect he's going to be, I think you're still looking at a player that can sometimes fill in strongly enough in your point totals that they are going to be in a flex and then bring in the points behind them, which would be coming from this case in Fant, which is what we would expect. Even if that doesn't, you have Fant now playing in a situation in Seattle, which surely is not, the most attractive place to be. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you this big story of why Fant is, you know, going to be a big breakout this year. I think for me, at least, this play really is more so just about how strongly I feel about Kittle.
Sure. I think for me, Fant being a tight end too that we can stop on, you know, the Seahawks offense is one in transition. There is some familiarity. If Drew Lock were to win the job, there's already the familiarity there. In tight end premium settings, the NFL Stat Explorer shows us that in 2021, Noah Fant had a 44% tight end one rate. So in weeks where he would be a tight end one and Kittle also explodes, you have a situation where, you know, we get one of those tight ends into the flex. There's enough athletic upside and fantasy upside from Fant to actually get us some weeks where both of those tight ends make it into the picture. And it's not just the stopgap stuff. Case in point, I mean, last season, Fant did have 3 weeks with 19.6 points or greater in tight end premium settings, and including an outburst of nearly 30 points against Las Vegas back in week six. So I think given the uncertainty in Seattle, if you go with Geno Smith, who maybe a different player at this point of his career in terms of his aggressiveness, you could end up seeing Fant get a lot more shorter depth of target activity, and potentially even surprise and out target DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett especially. And if Lock's there, that's the familiarity. I mean, he does not have to build that chemistry with Fant. He's got it coming in. It's the other players that are chasing that. So that's what really put me on it. You mentioned Tolbert, and this gets us into the back half of the draft here. Strategically, once we got past Fant, we're then looking at Prescott and Rodgers. We've made the decision. We're stopping there. We've made the decision. We're stopping at the two tight ends. And then now, how do we set this team up to have the really big spike weeks? So we're ignoring ADP a little bit more and focusing much more on, you know, what's the earliest we can stomach taking a player to not miss and complete that stack. So, you know, we load up our queue with the Jalen Tolberts and with the Sammy Watkins, and then even with a free agent like Will Fuller, who could potentially land in Green Bay and has been linked there a little bit. Not seriously, but is basically in every, you know, potential beat report article that comes out on who will end up in Green Bay. And then you give yourself two options to complete stacks, but then also kind of a dice roll that could end up with an addition stack. With Aaron Rodgers, we also had Aaron Jones back in the second round. And one thing that we talked about last week is that, you know, Jones could potentially be more active as a receiver this year with Dylan being on the field a little bit more in his role, even growing too. So we actually stacked Rodgers on the front end, not on purpose. We went in on Jones before we knew we would target Rodgers, but we have a way to stack, you know, before and after. So we go with Jalen Tolbert in round 13. Reason he's appealing here, obviously we had Prescott, but James Washington still hasn't been in any of the OTAs. And Michael Gallup is a little behind schedule in his recovery. So, I mean, the door is open for Tolbert to be the wide receiver too, to open the season. And, you know, if he gets off to the races, I mean, why would he necessarily need to relinquish that role? I would expect Dalton Schultz to out-target him during that time, but being the third most frequently targeted pass catcher in Dallas is certainly attractive. We come back in round 14 with Darrell Williams, a player that we're starting to get some exposure to here, Dave, but he's a James Conner injury away from having a super valuable role that we've seen Conner and Kenyon Drake before him smash in. And, you know, he has enough of the same, you know, size and skill overlap to think that he could have, you know, some of those touchdown heavy weeks, which has really been the key for both of those guys. I mean, Connor had all those points last year, but I don't even think he rushed for 800 yards if memory serves. We come back in round 15, we get that other stack with Sammy Watkins targeting the uncertain pass receiving core in Green Bay. We would have loved to have had Lazard earlier. It just didn't work out. So we come back with Sammy Watkins for our second player in that Green Bay offense linked to Aaron Rodgers. Kendrick Bourne in the 16th round, thinking that, you know, Mac Jones taking a step forward in year two, which is that year that we typically see the big leaps for quarterbacks. Jones not a player as exciting on the ground as some of the other guys like, you know, a Zach Wilson, for example, or full year two of Jalen Hurts, for example, that you would want to see take a step forward for fantasy purposes. But Mac Jones becoming a better downfield passer, a better red zone passer would certainly elevate Bourne even above where he was last year. And he had a great win rate last year. Damian Williams, Dave, let's talk about this pick. This one felt pretty important. We'd only had four running backs by the end of round 16. And, you know, we knew we were going to want at least one more. We ended up with two more. But we're left with a decision between Damian Williams, journeyman, Brian Robinson, the rookie in Washington. And then the other player that we discussed here was Kenyon Drake. Now, he would end up sliding to round 19. But let's focus on these three players because we had a little bit of back and forth in the Slack about it.
Yeah, and the interesting thing here is I believe that we have had now multiple drafts where we're kind of staring down a similar set of running backs. Robinson has been in the mix. Williams has been in the mix. I think we introduced Drake for the first time here. Now, as you mentioned, at this point in the draft, we are not very strong in terms of the number of running backs that we have. So we're thinking that we don't want this to be, you know, a lost opportunity here with running back. I think the case that one would make for Robinson here is that, you know, Gibson could be banged up a little bit. Perhaps Washington, you know, is a touch better this year, or Robinson, it just turns out, actually is a pretty decent back. I have at points in the draft cycle, or I was, you know, pretty high on Robinson and what he could be. So you have the player there where it's hard, though, to say that there's necessarily a built-in role, right? Not surprising for backs at this point. Turn our attention toward Williams. Well, you got Patterson there. You've also got the player that we really like in Algier. But in comparison to other rookies, you know, there's no guaranteeing that this team is going to force his way in there. So there's a decent case that can be made that Williams should have to see some opportunity, especially in the earlier on portion of the season. Now, Kenyon Drake, obviously going to be behind Jacobs in this Las Vegas offense. It's hard to know exactly what it's going to look like, but should hopefully be able to see some role even as the rookie White mixes in there. So that was kind of the lay of the land with those three backs. Now, I asked you about Robinson, and I have asked you about him prior. Now, we kind of made our decision for the team here, which I'll let you kind of speak on how we finalized it. We made it for different reasons, but I'm also curious as to if it was just these couple of situations that we have been drafting in which you are leery of Robinson, or is this kind of a, you know, across all league type of trend for you?
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast.
That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Sure. So we ended up going Damian Williams in round 17 here. You kind of hit on it with Tyler Allgeier being a fifth round investment. And actually from a size and skill set perspective, being pretty similar to Damian Williams, you just wonder if the veteran presence is going to get the first crack at it. Allgeier also with the history of being a linebacker and the special teams work could potentially be utilized in that way before he gets a traditional offensive role. So Williams figuring in early with the team, maybe being more creative with Patterson, or maybe even using him more in the slot to get, you know, more overall upside out of the offense by having, you know, their most talented players on the field together. I mean, Williams could really slot in there. You know, we know Arthur Smith likes the bigger backs, putting Patterson back out there in the slot, running him on jet sweeps, using him more as a traditional receiver and less as a back out of the backfield. Certainly within the range of outcomes, and would provide us with, you know, even just a handful of usable weeks from Damian Williams to cover up our buys. But, you know, this team is really, you know, predicated on Aaron Jones basically being an every week starter and Mitchell and Penny kind of rotating through. So we're not asking for a lot here, but I think we made the decision here because Robinson kind of has to usurp a younger and, you know, a still young entrenched player in Antonio Gibson. And Drake, while he has the upside, the potential upside of being a Josh McDaniels screen back who could, you know, smash if he's used like James White, the question is, you know, how will he totally recover from the injury that he had looked at this spring, and then how will Zamir White figure into the situation as well? And Jacobs isn't exactly horrible in the receiving game. That the team under the prior regimes just hadn't really used him to his potential there. So it is an uncertain backfield, and that's why we would still want to have some exposure to Drake. I certainly have some exposure, but I was totally fine with your comfort level for Williams, and it was kind of justified in looking at how far Drake ended up sliding. He really does last until around 19-20, and sometimes is not even drafted. So we go Williams there. To hit your point on Brian Robinson, I think I wouldn't say that I'm even interested really at all in any format, but in Dynasty, I would be more interested just because we've really seen most of the Alabama backs who have gotten big usage before they graduate, even if they've been older or even if they've been underutilized but utilized at all, they've gone on and had some NFL relevance. I mean, Drake's actually a perfect example of this. And so, you know, Gibson was not a first-round pick. You know, he's already entering round three or year three of his rookie deal. And if, you know, if he doesn't end up figuring out how to be a better actual running back, you know, there's a range of outcomes where Robinson ends up being the first and second down pounder, with McKissick being the traditional change of pace back and Gibson just being a gimmick player.
Yeah.
And so, you know, over the course of the year, we could see that something like that materialize if the team tires of Gibson not being as good between the tackles. I mean, Robinson does not have the burst or home run ability of Gibson. I mean, that's pretty clear, but you know, he is a more traditional runner. So I don't think I actually have any exposure even in Dynasty, but if I was gonna have exposure, it would be in that format.
Wow. No exposure this far. I mean, it makes sense too, because basically all you're doing at running back is just drafting Mark Ingram.
Well, I mean, and also, I mean, like from in Dynasty purposes, you're basically drafting a second contract running back already with no history of production from an age perspective. So it's like, I mean, there's just,
rather than have a player like that, who's probably not going to have a big receiving role with the presence of McKissick. I mean, I'd rather just actually probably have JD McKissick than Brian Robinson in Dynasty.
Perfect.
So like that, like, yeah. So that's really why no exposure there. With as many drafts as I do. Yeah.
Let's talk about that just for 1 second, about the fact that an incoming rookie at running back, you would rather not have said player. And it wasn't like he went, you know, round 7 in the draft. You would actually rather have that player less than at this point, a pretty old veteran pass catching back, not known for putting up, you know, significant additional production on the ground. It's just interesting. I think for some people, they might want a quick breakdown of how they, you know what I mean? How you could arrive there with two players that are so different.
Sure. Yeah, sure. I mean, the same would go for, you know, players like Nyheim Hines and, you know, et cetera. Players that are basically blocked by bell cow, you know, alpha types in their offenses. But in any given week, like in Dynasty or even in a roster managed redraft league, you know, it's tough if you're looking for that spot start and it's not an end of bench player or it's not a best ball situation where, you know, you're looking for that, you know, crazy outcome where a player gets injured and then you don't have to deal with the waiver wire. In a given week, if I just need 10 to 12 points, I mean, I'm much more likely to get that from the receiving back with a defined role. I mean, I only need the team to actually get in to get the ball in the last 4 minutes of each half and run one drive. And I just need two dump offs to that player. Yep. And all of a sudden in PPR, I'm where I need to be. I mean, Brian Robinson could end up getting 4 or 5 carries, you know, of relative low value between the 20s. And he can average 5 yards a carry. And I mean, I get 2 points for that, you know? So, you know, it's just, and if you can't see the player actually achieving high heights, even in a best case scenario. So I think Brian Robinson is less talented overall than Antonio Gibson in terms of big play ability. And just like overall, like if he were to hit the nuts on his NFL possible outcomes versus Gibson doing it, you know, Gibson probably looks like Joe Mixon.
Yeah.
Robinson looks like, I don't know, AJ Dillon or something like that. You know, it's not a player that's going to have more than, or 80% of Nick Chubb, 70% of Nick Chubb, not a player that's going to catch a lot of balls. And, you know, I don't think that Washington's going to be even good enough to really lean into a player like Robinson and give him like the 300 carries. So he's, you know, he's probably capped at 180 to 200 carries unless, you know, the team becomes good enough to just be milking the game in the second half all the time. So there's just really no reason that I would want to have a player like that.
Yeah. So, you know, what's interesting, and this is just kind of more to talk about Robinson. When you talk about, you know, the potential of like an AJ Dillon type of case, I feel like we could end up in a situation with Robinson where there's always kind of this underlying hype that just seems to carry. Because it feels like, all right, they could just be close to getting the offense, but it never, you know, never materializes. So that's an interesting breakdown from you there.
Yeah, I mean, if Gibson went down, like in a roster management league, I mean, I would run to the waiver wire and pick Robinson up.
Yeah.
But I just don't think he's going to do anything unless that happens because of McKissick being there. Like, Gibson already does the things they're drafting Robinson to do. I think Robinson is just a hedge on Gibson actually becoming a real running back.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. All right. Anything else that you wanted to... I'm going to be perfectly honest, Curtis. My mind has completely lost anything that we talked about prior. So
let me round it off. We got sidetracked talking about the Damian Williams, Brian Robinson, Kenyon Drake decision in round 17.
Okay.
So we're rounding the horn here. And in 18, 19, 20, we take Will Fuller in round 18. This could be a total zero like it would have been in 2021. But there's also obviously a lot of upside, you know, to this pick. You know, Will Fuller objectively is still probably a top 60 wide receiver in this league in terms of what he can bring to a team. I mean, I think if he can prove that his finger works and prove that his hamstrings are attached, he's going to get signed. I mean, DeSean Jackson was still getting contracts, you know, within the last 24 months. Yep. So Will Fuller is going to get a contract. And if he lands in the right spot, he's going to have a role right away. We kind of hope that maybe it's with Green Bay, so we get another exposure there. But
yeah,
wherever he lands, I think, you know, objectively, he's good enough, if healthy, that he's going to give us some starts. And then we take Brian Robinson, wide receiver 94 in round 19. I'm kind of surprised he's not going earlier. You know, the offense, obviously, it doesn't project like one of the great ones in the NFL for this season. But you're seeing other, you know, team transfer, lower profile guys like Russell Gage all of a sudden become, you know, top 10 round, single digit round picks. And I mean, I think Edwards has a pretty good path to reminds me of, you know, a little bit lesser of a situation because he hasn't had this type of NFL success yet, but like Corey Davis going to the Jets, like there wasn't a lot of competition yet. And Davis was getting pushed up at least into like the round 12 territory. Edwards, I mean, yes, Drake London is there, but I mean, it wouldn't really be that big of a surprise for Edwards to out-target Drake London in year one and be the team, you know, two option. And even if he is the team three option, if we think Atlanta's going to stink this year, he should still get plenty of opportunity. I could easily see us getting two or three games from Edwards this deep in the draft. And then we end the draft with our RB6, the presumed second guy for the Giants right now behind Saquon Barkley, who hasn't been the picture of health in 2 years and who has a previous relationship with new head coach Brian Daboll from their time in Buffalo together, Matt Breida. And, you know, he hasn't been the picture of health either or gotten much activity on the field in the last two seasons, but not much stands in the way of him producing. And it's possible that the team could also try to protect Saquon's touch count a little bit as well, and we could get some surprise production from Breida, even if Barkley doesn't go down. So when you put this all together, you know, strategically, we wanted to share this build of, you know, hero RB coming back with an early tight end and then going just two quarterbacks in the first 10 rounds. I mean, there's some pretty exciting results. And so if you're willing to be wide receiver heavy, plant your flag on a couple quarterbacks, wherever you feel comfortable drawing that line at just going with two, you can really build a lot of different exciting roster configurations. I know Ben and Sean talk about this, you know, a lot on their pod. Sean and I talk a lot about this when we're preparing for, you know, our main event drafts every year, which is obviously different with the roster management approach, but the same, you know, strategies kind of apply. It all comes down to the construction of putting yourself in a position to be successful in ways that other teams don't have access to. Also would want to point to, if this type of discussion is really interesting to you, point you to our best ball pod that Zach Kruger and Colm Kelly are doing. They've had some great guests. I think Derek Brown recently drafted a team with them. They went extreme zero RB, pretty fun squad that they ended up with. Dave and I will be back with some more traditional content. Stop talking about this draft that's been dragging on for 3 weeks. And hopefully Dave will be a little healthier later this week. Until next time, this is the RotoViz Fantasy Football Podcast.
Thank you for listening to the RotoViz Fantasy Football Show. Send us questions at rvffshow@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at DaveCabinFF and at CPatrickNFL. Leave us a voicemail at 978-615-9214. And make sure to rate, review, and subscribe.